This is the Mindful Experiment Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Vic. Excited that you're here. This podcast is all about diving deep into the mind and understanding this experiment or this game we call life. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Guys, it's Dr. Vic, and you're listening to another episode here on the Mindful Experiment. As each Friday, we have someone that we share that we had an interview with to help raise your consciousness, to help break patterns, to help understand the mind more, or life, universal laws, spirituality, whatever can relate to level you up in the life of what you're doing. This week, we had the distinct pleasure and honor of interviewing Dr. Francis Yahia, and what an interview this was. We dove into a ton of things about ego, shadow work, how spirituality, spirit is always working with us, and that sometimes if we don't pay attention to it, if we don't learn how to break through this over time, that there will be things that can come up that are going to be feel like life shattering, like a disease, an illness, a loss of a loved one, something along those lines, to help us reflect, to get back on path to what we were designed to do. And I highly recommend this. It's a great, great interview. But give you a little background about Dr. Francis. Francis is a mental health counselor. She's an Akashic Records reader, archetypal astrologer, podcast host, author, and college professor. She's earned her PhD in mental health counseling from Barry University and has studied metaphysics for more than three decades. Having been born into a cult and finally freeing herself and her children 33 years later, Francis is concerned that cults and other course of spiritual groups' teachings, techniques are on the rise. The therapy model and techniques she uses are based on universal laws and are designed to liberate individuals and restore self-love, self-empowerment, and self-worth. Her background in mental health counseling and metaphysics helped her create therapeutic models that help her clients gain personal insights and unlock the power of their own intuition by removing destructive subconscious programming. Dr. Francis serves clients nationally and internationally, and her mission is to help everyone free themselves from any source of spiritual coercion. What a podcast. What a great episode. We will dive into some of these things, and she'll talk a lot about how she does help in that process and so much more. I know you're going to get a lot out of this. So with no further ado, here is Dr. Francis. Dr. Francis, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. This is such a pleasure.
I'm excited to have you on, even just in the before jumping on here. I can already tell we're going to have a fun conversation for the listeners. So as my listeners know, I always like to get right into things. And I'm very, very curious to hear your story. So if you don't mind sharing your journey, how you got to doing what you're doing today, how did life kind of cultivate you? And you can go as long as short as you like on that one.
Absolutely. So I'll touch on some of the highlights. So I was actually born into a cult. I'm Cuban by heritage, and it's not untraditional to be in like Afro-Cuban religions, which are mythology based. So I don't think the origin of the cult was intended to be a cult. I think the intention of the leader was to teach spiritual teachings. So I think the early years were pretty strong foundation for me spiritually. And my parents were actually the material arm of the spirit. So I learned at a very early age that spirit and matter are always together. And I see this in practice, something that people struggle. So I was forced into a marriage with the cult leader's nephew. And shortly after that, I had three children. I left the cult. And I met another man who was a medium as well. I was with him for a few years. So I found myself always sort of like in the claws of someone who was going to teach me spirit. And I broke up with him years later, and I was at home and I was crying, and I went to my altar and I threw all my, you know, relics away, and I yelled at God and I said, if you really exist, show me. And I had a book called the Zohar, which is from the Kabbalist tradition. And it opened up to a quote that said, there is no coercion in spirituality. And I realized at that age that I had never known true spirituality. So that really was, for me, the turning point to seek. So I would go boating every week by my mom's house, and she would watch this astrology program. And I was listening to a psychologist on the show as a guest speaker. She was a Pisces and a psychologist just like me. And she says that astrology was just really easy for clients. In a few minutes, she could see their issues and then go into the session. So I called for a session the next day. And the gentleman that went on the TV show gave me a reading. And what should have been an hour lasted about 10 minutes, the most important 10 minutes of my life. He told me something I knew and something I didn't know. He told me I'd be divorced, which I was. And he told me that I could be in charge of my own life. And I didn't know that to be true. So I said, sign me up. So I started astrology classes with him. And what was supposed to be a 15-month program, I did in about 6 months. It's all mythology-based, symbology-based. I just learned so much content. And shortly after that, I was driving and I heard very clearly the words Akashic Records. So I Googled, I found a reader, I got a reading the next day. Next week, I signed up for her classes. At that point, I had sort of the foundation of my tools, which was astrology and the Akashic Records, which is what I still do to this day. I started seeing clients regularly. I built my practice. So that was sort of the foundation. And from there, one day in meditation, what I thought was a shaman guide showed up and he's like, I'm your next teacher. So I was driving and my guide say, check your phone. His name is in your phone. His name was Lone Wolf. And I look in my contacts and I have a phone number for Lone Wolf. I do not know who this person is. So I call him. He's like, oh, I've been waiting for your call. And he was about 45 minutes away. I went to visit him the next day. I took some shaman program with him for a bit. And then after I finished that, I went for like a local reading at a local store. And my ex-husband, my husband at the time, he's like, how was it? And I said, the best reading of my life and the worst reading of my life. I said, the best because I discovered that what I have is amazing. The worst because it wasn't just that great. So at that point, I stopped seeking outside in terms of teachers and realized that I really had that moment between my spiritual upbringing, my metaphysical and universal laws, my astrology, my shaman, Akashic Records. I had everything. And then I dove extremely deep into my own sort of synthesis of how I was going to make all of this possible for me and teaching and so forth. So that really was the birth. A few years later, I got cancer for the first time. And I heard pull it out by the root. And at that moment, I realized I had to go very, very deep. I started severe intense shadow work. I created a shadow program. I have a book called The Seven Gates. It's all about the shadow discovery. I created all this content. And at that point, I started really diving deeper into my thoughts, my emotions, my desires, which I have a 12 truths to the spiritual path. And those are the first three truths. And then I got cancer again. My entire life fell apart. I lost my hair. I lost my husband. My kids went to school. I lost my house. I lost my money. I lost everything. And I went into a severe depression for about 3 years where I laid on a couch and could do nothing. And then I got out of that and I changed my life. I put everything that I had written about and taught about and studied for years into practice. And that's where I'm here now. So I'm working on this book that'll be ready later this year. And I have this series on my YouTube called Spiritual Adulting, where from the moment of conception to our last breath, we are guided spiritually. And I'm sort of passionate about trying to help people to prevent the massive blow up of their life in order to find themselves, self-love, their spirit. Because in my spiritual adulting map, there is a link between seeking guidance and seeking your version of spirituality and a need for grief or and or illness, so mental health or physical illness, in order to have permission to go deeper. Societally, we're not supported to say, no, I need a day, I need a year. So we create the nonsense of illness, mental or physical, as I did, to be able to sit on a couch for 3 years and mourn what I had made of my life, an absolute mess. I call that shattering the snow globe. So I shatter snow globes for a living, and I try to help clients get to that one session right off the bat, so then we can get to the real self and the issues immediately without having to take a 2 or 3 year hiatus from life to mourn. And you can mourn and grieve while you're doing the spiritual process. So that's a big part of the spiritual adulting book that I've written and this video series. So it's really, really important to me to get that out there, especially with the pandemic and all the mental health issues that have arisen out of that.
What a story. I mean, there's so much, so many questions I have, but you know, one of the things is, you know, what you're talking about mourning and stuff, is that mourning, just for clarification, is that mourning of just like things you've done in the past? Is that mourning of letting go of old self to new self? Like, what is that emotion that has to, that shows up?
Well, the actual grief process, if you've ever read like Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and the stages of grief, the grief process, her steps are right on point, but they're actually linked to the soul perspective. We begin a grief process, which is denial, first stage, the moment we're conceived. The moment we're conceived, we create what I call this delusional snow globe. And until we shatter it with some earth shattering, what I call a perpetrator, we don't transition into our new life. Most of us are holding some really deep, dark secret, we think, our impurest thought that is given to us at the moment of conception. And we live our life a complete lie to hold that lie, that secret, so no one sees it. So we're building our entire life on a lie from the moment of conception. And there are very marked ages where we want to blow this up so that we can access that. So the grief process is actually mourning the life you've created, A, from past lives, because the moment of conception is determined on a vibration from your divine justice and your karma. So you're grieving sort of your past deeds, impure thoughts, desires, emotions you've never processed, the reality of the earthly world of the nonsense you've made of your life. So it's really mind, body, and spirit that you're grieving. When you get to that point and you open that vault up, you're very surprised what's in there, and your demons, so to speak, come out, but they release you. You're liberated. So until we have that grief process, we're not fully liberated. There's a concept in Ayurvedic medicine called samprapti, and it's the 6 stages of diseases. In the Western world, it's usually stage 5 and 6 that we diagnose disease. But in Ayurvedic medicine, just the simple sort of upset to the system, that's my hope. Can I help you in your disease grief process early on so that you don't create a full-blown illness like I did? And we can. We don't have to blow up our lives, our marriages, you know, lose custody, the things that happened to me, because we need to find our inner self and our deepest truths. So there's a lot of room there for growth through grief and mourning, but it doesn't have to be as disastrous as many of us live it. So yeah, it's on all levels.
When you put it from a health perspective, I can relate 100% on that, because I'm in a profession where we try to help individuals when they don't have anything going on. I don't get that often, but it, I mean, I think in my career in 10 years, I've only had like a handful of people come in and just say, "Doc, I want to be the best person I can be health-wise and feeling and function and all that. What can you do?" And I'm always like, okay, this is going to be a whole different conversation right? than what I'm going to have normally. But no, I love how you bring up.
It's a great motivator.
It is. And one of the things is, like, you know, in the Bible, original sin, right? We, in the original sin, I've done, you know, a lot of, I love what you're sharing here, because this makes perfect sense, because it's that, like I call a cultural identity where we let, and it's not just that, it's fam. When I say culture, it's family, it's friends, it's past lives, it's ancestral, it's all these things all mixed together. And then you create this identity, and then the ego will hold that to stay true until you challenge it to break that, right? And And this is this sometimes too, where people have like the night of the a dark night of the soul process, where they're that is the shattering process, and in that is that kind of similar to that to the what you're kind of talking about?
Yes. Yeah, so first, let me address the first piece that you said, because that's actually right on point. So I'll just use astrology as an example. I don't know if you're familiar with family constellations, but Bert Hellinger says your parents gave you life and that's enough. And I love that quote, and I use it in all my books because it's the truth. So I say to clients, pretend I'm your OBGYN and I hand you a ball of energy and say, here, this is your kid. They look at me like, well, where's the body? Exactly. Where's the body? That's what we need. Our soul needs a vehicle. And the entire purpose of your parents conceiving you is simply to give you a vehicle. But with that vehicle, you're given a body, obviously genetics, biology. You're given a value system. You're given a thought process, and you're given a level of consciousness. Those are the first four houses in astrology. They're the foundation, what you were speaking about. In the fifth house, I say we get a spiritual STD. If you don't get the spiritual STD, which is to say, think, and do, your soul is sort of wrapped in the ego, in that personality, which is thoughts, emotions, desires that were gifted to you at conception, low vibration. Your job, like Joseph Campbell says, heed the call, is to basically rid yourself of those skins. And that's found in a beautiful myth of Hercules and the Nemean lion. When you rip away those skins of your false thoughts, beliefs, desires, emotions, consciousness, then you're actually on that sort of journey forward. That is most often accompanied by a dark night of the soul. It may not be the darkest night of the soul, though. So dark night of the soul archetypally is ruled by Pluto, but Saturn, that we have more frequently, I call them the skinny cows, are every 7 years we're sort of given an opportunity to move into that STD, to become that spiritual soul self and heed the call. But a lot of us don't, and we kind of put it under the rug. We might do a little work, but really not that much. And our soul begs us for what I call a perpetrator, to perpetrate, to push us forward into the STD process. And it's accompanied with this dark night of the soul, and that's Pluto. And Pluto is the criminal. It's the perpetrator. He's the one that rules all of our transitions. So I have a four-step model of how the subconscious develops. And the third stage is the birth process. So if you know your birth story is great, but any transition will speak to this. We have three major transitions: the birth, sexuality, and death out of the physical body. Those three transitions are ruled by Pluto. So when we have not been able to get out of that snow globe and shatter it fully with those sort of soft, quote unquote, soft Saturn cycles, we create a perpetrator, a criminal, some sort of drastic blow up to force us forward through the birth canal, if you will. We call that a dark night of the soul. It's often accompanied with some sort of illness or grief or loss. And if you want to know what it is, it's usually, it reminds me, and maybe I'm aging myself here, but Eddie Murphy many years ago had a comedy show called Raw. And a big stint was half, his wife wanted half. That's Pluto. Pluto wants half. He wants you to give half to matter, which is what you're doing, emotions, beliefs, thoughts, consciousness, and half to God or spirit, yourself. So when something ends abruptly, when something is pulled from you, there's no closure, a death, you become a widow, your partner dies in an accident, you lose custody of your kids, something half, that's Pluto. That is you creating that grief, that perpetrator, so that you can literally push out of the birth canal into your new transition. But we can minimize it. Some births are easy. Some births are traumatic. We get to choose. So hopefully, I call myself the perpetrator. I'm the Pitocin that pushes you through the birth canal so that you can then kind of move forward in your transition. And hopefully it's a little smooth sailing and not umbilical cord wrapped around your neck.
I love that. I love the analogies with that. I think it's one of those things that it's eloquently broken down, and it is like spirit can, it'll give you friendly little nudges and just kind of say, hey, you know, kind of making you right. go this way. And then if you say, yeah, no, that's great. Or you get back pulled into your comfort zone or whatever that is. Then all of a sudden spirit can be like, okay, fine. We're going to have to bring bigger players into this. Cause right. I always tell people you have like a spiritual, you know, a spiritual path, came here for an experience. Right. And it's, and then no matter what, you're going to get that experience. Like it's going to happen unless it's in the cards that you can, you know, divert away. But if it's not, it's going to happen. And people are like, well, what do you mean? How does everything happen? Like, trust me, look at your life. You'll see it. Look backwards. You'll see like, oh crap. Look at this. What happened here? Look what happened there. Like if that didn't have to happen, or if I didn't get, look what the, something happens, right? Then you go back and go, okay, how did I create that? How did I allow that to happen? What did I miss along the journey that, and I tell patients this all the time too in health, like someone comes in, I love this, where a patient will come in and a guy will, it's mostly, I mentioned males in this, not okay. that it could be anyhow, but because they're big guys and they're like, they can barely walk in. And I always love asking the question. I'm like, so how did this happen? And they're like, I was picking up my son's Lego, or I was going to pick up a sock. And I'm like, that had to be a very heavy Lego and sock for that to happen. So in their mindset, right, they're thinking, oh, it was that moment. And then I have to walk them through, and you probably do the same thing where I'm like, let's go back now. Let's see. Have you ever had this happen? Or did you ever have like a little dull ache and it went away and you thought nothing of it? Yeah, I've had that. How about this? Did you ever do something here? And oh yeah, I had that too. I'm like, those were little clues, like, you know, the body was exhausted. You've been burning the reserves. And now there's coming to a point where if you don't pay attention, it will slap you across the face. Cause if you don't change, life is going to make you change one way or another.
So it's interesting what you said about this is going to happen. Just like we age physically, we age spiritually. Our spiritual growth is programmed age by age. That's the purpose of the spiritual adulting series, from the moment of conception to our last breath in this lifetime. It continues, obviously, but during the lifetime. And it's actually programmed into us. Every marked year will keep you in your spiritual growth. Now, so use the analogy of medicine or biology. You can age beautifully if you take care of your skin and you exercise and you eat well. You can do the same thing with your spiritual growth. So I'm a bit of a spiritual glutton, and I use the fruit analogy. You're going to grow spiritually. It might be a tiny little grape. Well, I want a big jackfruit. So I work on spiritual gluttony to grow spiritual, but you are guaranteed at least a little grape just by virtue of being a spirit in a body. So that's programmed. And that's a really great point that you make, because we are nudged. These skinny cows that I say are those sort of Saturn cycles. And there are some others too, but those are the primary ones. But if you aren't paying attention, you need to get your own attention. Your spirit needs to get your own attention, and it will be in a Pluto transit, and you will never ever forget that. When I do charts for people, I'm like, so what happened this year? And it's all, and I'm like, it had to be big. And they're like, oh my God, life changing, you know, whatever it was. And it's always very memorable. So we are definitely guided from, you know, womb to tomb spiritually, but we haven't been educated as to what's happening along the journey, what we should do along the journey to maximize the growth. And I have this whole psychological homeostasis program. The body's homeostasis is actually designed to help you. The psyche's homeostasis is designed to hurt you. And that is so important for people to understand. It's to keep us in instinct, to keep us in emotion, to keep us in child, to keep us in that perfect snow globe, so to speak, that womb. And if we don't leave the womb in our psyche, we are stuck in a really bad negative feedback loop. And the only sort of disturbance we have is that Pluto, that criminal, that perpetrator that comes to sort of blow it up so we can come out of the snow globe. But I have to tell clients, that's not a guarantee. You can go through an illness, and I'm sure you see this all the time. You can go through a grief process, a loss, and then go right back into the system and pick up what I call your toxic waters, pick right back up and go into the nonsense. So it's not a guarantee. This is, spirituality is a full-time job. Like this isn't what I call post-it note spirituality. This is not fluff. It's not crystals and pendulums. This is hard work, self-analysis, looking at your thoughts, your emotions, your behaviors, your level of consciousness. It is full-time job. You won't have time for anything else if you really get on this path. But there is an intermediate, what I call the 48 to 52, where you can, and is what the teachers teach us, be in the spirit and be in the body all at once, do it all at once. That's the point. That's what Jesus, Buddha, Krishna came to teach. And we're a bit far removed with that, with the new age and this post-it note spirituality. And my hope is to bring some awareness around that so that we can balance both and have a really healthy, beautiful material life and what that means for you, as well as a beautiful, spiritual, abundant life.
I love that. Yeah, it's like one of the things where, in, I don't know if I may hit the mark with you on this, I may not, when it comes to the new age movement and kind of the stuff that goes on, like, well, just do this and everything will be fine. And and there's nothing wrong. I mean, I'm all about mindset. This is what I teach, and this is what I've tried mastering over the years. And I get that, and I use spiritual principles and truth and all that with it. But I liked more of the, no, this is like, I'm going to be a little extreme here. This is like hell because you're doing the work. This is where nothing is all airy and fluffy, because you can go, if you think that's how it is, go downtown to New York or Chicago and just start saying hi to people and watch how you get weird looks. Chicago's a little more friendly. That's where I'm at. but no, it's one of the things where you have to constantly do the hard stuff. And I, you know, it took me a while to grasp that, because I got caught up into that new age movement. And I was like, oh, great. Life doesn't have to be hard. You can just mentally think of certain things. People are like, no, you know, and some people will guide us, like, no, it's just where your mindset is. If it doesn't happen, that means you're just not focused enough. You're not thinking this way. And I was like, okay, fine. So I didn't know any better. And then as I started practicing this, I was kind of like, no, you got to do the work. Like, you got to be open to it. Like, bring it on. And so then all of a sudden I flipped the script and I'm like, you know what? Everything that happens to comes my way, I'm going to take a moment with it. I'm going to process it and I'm going to learn from it. And I'm going to let that be my teacher instead of me, you know, seeking. Nothing wrong with having teachers. You need them. But it's just the essence of, like, how do I let that, my life, guide me in that way, in a sense. And then it was a whole new world in so many different ways.
Yeah. So you touch on a few important points. There's a great myth called the Garden of Hesperides. It's a Hercules myth, and it speaks about the spiritual teachers. We do need spiritual teachers, but the problem is there's two types of spiritual teachers. And in this myth, the nudge that we were talking about earlier, his name is Nereus. That's what I hope to be. Provide a nugget of information, give you a question to ask yourself, and it's on your path, your journey, your way. Busiris, which is unfortunately what I got in the claws of for many years, is the one that promises the, you know, the illusions and the bells and whistles and the fun stuff, the fluff. And we get very enamored, and that is the word, enamored with that. And we have to be very weary. And in the myth, Hercules is nudged by Nereus in the right direction, which is all we're here to do in terms of helping others. Busiris ties him up, takes his clothes, and leaves him sort of for dead, and he has to start all over again. And you said something super important, using life as your teacher. That's the law of correspondence. I live my life by that law. I live by 8 universal laws, but that is my primary law. There is nothing that enters my sphere, nothing that I don't ask, what is this teaching? I call that extract the essence. Every conversation, every happenstance, everything is a message. I may not know it immediately. I have a procedure I call the Mr. Potato Head It. So I might take a few situations and then I string it together and I Mr. Potato Head It. It's one of the tools I use when I teach people how to develop intuition. And within 2 or 3 circumstances, you're going to have the string of information that your guidance is giving you. Because it's not always immediately clear, why did this car accident show up? So you sometimes, like you said, need some time to process that. But if you're in that constant self-analysis, you will see that you are always guided. And you also said something very important earlier about your clients. How did you create this? If you do not take personal responsibility that you have created absolutely every single thing in your life. That is your starting point. That's what you're grieving. That's the grief process. When you get to that realization that every single thing, all the nonsense was you, caused by you for your growth, you have to grieve that. I had to grieve my custody battle, my marriage, my chemo. I had so much to grieve. That's why I was on a couch for 3 years. But once I grieved it fully, I'm just in such a place of stability and peace. And that is something very important that I like to discuss with people. We don't like the shadows. We don't like discomfort, especially in the Western world. We like comforts, and I'm as comfortable seeking and as lazy as the rest of them. But we don't offer a receptacle for people to feel uncomfortable and process this. That's one of the reasons that illness is almost our last resort. When I was going through my depression for 3 years, I would go to work every day, and I had this one woman who held the space for me and this other gentleman. And every day I was like, yeah, it's a bad day. Not feeling it today. Some people would turn the heads. Some people would be like, oh, she's nuts. And other people would hold the space. It's our responsibility in the age of Aquarius. We're not here to save anybody. The nonsense that we're a savior or a healer or a rescuer is programmed in us from birth. But that isn't true. But you can be a receptacle. You can hold the space for someone to do their own healing. And that really starts with getting uncomfortable with the uncomfortable, with yourself, and allowing other people to just openly say, I'm having a bad day. But we're not conditioned in society. So illness is sort of like the only acceptable means. But if we shift as a society, and in the age of Aquarius, where we're just humanitarians, the servants for others and for ourselves, we create the space for ourselves to be uncomfortable and grieve in public. I'm having a bad day. Things are not good. Then we're saying to the other person, embrace your shadow, embrace your grief. I'll hold it for you while you hold it for me. And that's true healing. That's the age of Aquarius. So that's sort of the stuff I'm working on in my practice, in my relationships, in my life. And I was lucky enough to sort of make people uncomfortable, which is something that I'm very comfortable doing. And then people accepting that. And now those same people are coming to me for me to do that for them. And that's the real humanitarian. It's not pretending we're healing or wounded warriors. That's old savior age of Pisces stuff. That's not where we're in.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's, you know, it's interesting how we really do try to avoid that darkness. Because again, you said something earlier, and I love it, how, you know, the mind, you know, homeostasis of the body is a good thing, but homeostasis of the mind isn't. And I love that because it's so true. Ego, if you want to call it ego, but the mind, the brain's designed to keep you comfortable. It's designed to keep you in this realm. Like, here you go, you figure things out. Now just sit back and enjoy. And it's like,
nope.
Yeah. And I'm grateful I grew up in a family and a culture. I saw that. And a lot of people do this, but I got to see it. And I was always like, no, you gotta change things up. You gotta stir the pot every once in a while. And I remember stories my mom would tell me about, like, how she like, yeah, when you come in, it was just like, and when you get involved, it's like everything just explodes.
And you're the perpetrator like me.
Exactly. Because I'd be like, I don't mean it in a bad way. Like, I didn't have no evil intent. Like, never in my heart did I have evil intent. She goes, yeah, but when you get involved, holy cow. And I'm like, I go, you ever think maybe I'm opening things up in you? And I didn't know this back then. And now I look back and I'm like, oh, spirit was always trying to show me something.
Absolutely. So you said something earlier that was interesting, where you said to clients that they're in hell. And I actually just posted yesterday about this. So I have this dethroning Olympus series. I work a lot with like the Greek gods. And so yesterday I dethroned God. So I first dethrone your parents and then I dethrone God. And it's symbolic of that rescuer, savior that we think we are. It's not God per se. The universe is the universe. But all of the myths, all of the stories that are related to the perpetrator, to Pluto, to being the catalyst that you've been for your family, are all in the underworld, quote unquote, hell. So hell is, you know, one goddess. You got Pluto, Hades, Dispater, Inanna, Lucifer, Jesus, Kalima. there's a Catani gods in all of the mythologies, because there's a reason we need to go to the underworld. There's a reason we need to go to the depths of hell, which is here in our psyche, because Pluto holds the riches. He's in charge of minerals, mineral, spiritual, material wealth. You can have both spiritual wealth and material wealth. They're not in conflict at all, but you got to do the work. You have to go to the depths of hell. And Pluto is guarded by a three-headed dog named Cerberus, and he guards the underworld so that no one escapes. That's who guards us, our thoughts, our desires, and our emotions, the first three truths of a spiritual path. If you do not confront that three-headed dog, you are trapped in your own hell, your hell loop. And that's what we don't want to do. And so we make it very uncomfortable for people to do that work in our society, therefore make it hard by us, therefore, of course, the need for illness and a permission through some nonsense, divorce or widow or illness, to do the work. And there's a different way, because some Prop D says that there's six ages of illness. We just, with a minor disturbance, we have permission to do the work. We just have to make it a societal norm.
I agree. I love that. The three-headed dog. I totally forgot all about that. And yeah. I know when you're talking on names, I'm like, hold on, what's she saying there? I'm like, okay, I'm trying to remember here. I like Greek mythology.
I can't help it. I weave myth and symbol. Well, I understand the language of the universe to be myth, symbol, and metaphor. So that's what I study. So whether it's tarot or astrology or symbolism or mythology, that's how spirit speaks to us. So you have to get a little past the intellect and go into intuitive guidance, which is that language. That's where the law of correspondence. Sometimes you have to Mr. Potato Head it because it's not very clear. And you have to kind of say, oh, that's what they're telling me. But that three-headed dog is super symbolic. If we can actually look at those three aspects, then we can go into the spiritual STD process, which you were talking about, ego, which ego is simply our divine will, our directed divine will, our soul directed, but with the crap of the thoughts, emotions, beliefs, and low consciousness. That's it. Ego isn't bad. It's just covered in junk.
I wrote a book called The Walk in the Dark, and I tried to tackle this in two chapters, which I don't know if I did a great job, but I even say in the book, I'm like, I'm going to try and tackle this, that people have written books on this concept of how ego is not a bad thing, you know, and I kind of walk through that process. Yeah. Because if we didn't have ego, we wouldn't be here. Humanity wouldn't evolve to where we are today. We wouldn't be able to recognize patterns and all that good stuff. But
well, and the ego provides something extremely important, which is a boundary. The minute you're in a body, you have an ego. Well, it distinguishes you from your mother. Of course, that body is a boundary. Yes, we're all one. Principle of mentalism, all is mind. We're all one. We understand that. And the law of correspondence confirms by whatever happens to you in front of me is a message for me too. But we need our boundary. My entire sort of theories postulate what I call the 48 to 52. I have to stay on my kingdom. I have to mind my plek, my place, so that you can mind yours. And if I jump into your space and take over your space, and I prohibit you from feeding and flying. So I have to stay on my side of the road and just model from over here. So ego is extremely important. And if spiritual teacher, and I say this to clients all the time, if you ever have a spiritual teacher that says, I have no ego, run, because that's a narcissist.
That is so true on so many levels. Well, because I mean, even too, like, I don't know if you had to go through this. I know I did in all the teachings, how they used to bash ego and how you had to dissolve the ego. And I got to a point of a principle which said, I'm like, hold on here. The body never creates anything it doesn't need. The universe doesn't create anything it doesn't need. Nature doesn't create anything it doesn't need. So I was like, if we have an ego, there is a beautiful purpose of why we need this. And I'm going to find that out. And that's where it took me down a whole path where I'm like, hold up. And then I started again. I like, my mind works in a way where I'm like, okay, if it's good there, okay, what other areas of life is it going to show that truth? Because it's hidden. It's there.
It's there. Absolutely.
In neurology, you'll see it. And all these other things. I'm like, oh, this is fascinating. So very, very cool stuff when it comes to those kind of things. But yeah, I think that's one of the concepts that, you know, it would you say like, when I asked a question on ego, it's going away. Some about like where... Is it we live in a world today where we are very so tuned into the mind, letting ego dictate our lives, right? Like you look at it nowadays, like I get it sometimes where, you know, because being in the health world with COVID, being a chiropractor, being holistic, I may be sharing things that goes against the narrative or something along those lines. And it was always fascinating where people will be like, well, I know how you are because this is what you are. And they label and they throw all these things in there. And I'm always like, man, can we just get away from the labels? Like you don't, I'm not that label. Like, I don't know, don't throw a label, but we live in that kind of society. Is that just society's not doing the work and we're just perpetuating this kind of process?
When we're conceived, we were told two very big lies, or birthed, we're told two very big lies, that our parents love us unconditionally, or they should, and that our parents are here to meet our needs. That is absolutely not true. We are never going to be loved unconditionally unless we love ourselves unconditionally. It is not anyone else's job. It's not your partner's, it's not your kids, it's not your parents, it's your job. The second thing is, we are here to meet our parents' needs. So we go through life in this snow globe as a child. Basically, we're in the womb, walking around, looking for mom. And we do that three ways. They're the three unmet needs. Love is a given. We all have it. First is safety, security. Second is protection. And third is validation. We are definitely a society of validation. With money, with intellect, with cars, whatever it is. That is the main sort of need. But we have all three plus the love need. So that's what people are responding to. I'll meet your need if you meet mine. We're just children in these adult bodies trying, sucking our thumb, saying, okay, I'm going to do this for you. And it's a secret language I have so that you can meet my need in return. And no one's needs are met. We blow up really. I see a lot of couples. I have a whole theory for couples. It is no one's job to meet your need. It's your job. But we're not told this. So that's where validation comes in. That's where the ego. So from an archetypal standpoint, it's the masculine or Mars. And it's go, 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 go. It's the drive to work, the ambition, the money. Well, there's a counterpart to that, which is Venus, which is the feminine, the law of gender. You can't be balanced if you don't have both energies in a balanced state. But we don't value, it goes back to holding space or being a container for someone to share their sadness. We don't value compassion and empathy and love and these sort of soft corners, as I call them. I struggled with that myself. And that's also how we treat our inner child. It's like, go, go, go. You're a loser. You're a junk. You're this, you're that. So it's a constant bashing. And the feminine principle, the compassion, the love, the empathy, the container, the receptacle, that's from mythology, is sort of just there, empty, waiting to be utilized to hold the space so that we can be in balance. So it's not that ego is bad. Ego is simply, in the simplest terms, your soul with a direction. If you look at the glyph of Mars, the male glyph, it's circled spirit with an arrow, directed spirit. It's exactly where you're headed and where you're supposed to go. But you misdirect it when you're like, oh, that person's going to meet my needs. That person's going to meet my needs. And if you use your ego, your divine spirit, your soul, actually, and direct yourself based on meeting your own needs, we would create less nonsense.
I love that. I love the whole concept. You gave a visual. I'm sitting back in my head going, that's why we call it sins. If you look at the principle of the word sins, what it really comes from is from archery, and it just means missing the mark.
Yes.
And because again, I come from a Roman Catholic, Italian Roman Catholic background. So, right, that's like ingrained. It was ingrained in my head at one time. But it was interesting because I'd be like, why is everyone sinners? I go, I don't like that. You know, I'm a sinner right off the bat. I went on this whole thing when I was in my late teenage years. And, but then all of a sudden I was like, hold on, there's a truth. It's got to look for it. And then all of a sudden I'm like, holy cow. Yeah, that aspect of it, I totally get, because you're off your purpose. You're off from where you should be. So
exactly. And the actual symbol of and from archery, which is the sun symbol in your astrology chart, is a circle with a dot in the middle. And Jesus was the son of God, S-U-N, not S-O-N. That's part of my whole dethroning God. That's in you, your divine spark. you miss the mark. There's a great myth of Icarus where his father glues the wings onto him. And he's like, don't get too high. Don't fly too low. It's that 48 to 52, what I call it, which is like that sweet spot, that perfect mark. When you're in the 48 to 52, call it the yin yang, the golden mean, the Tao, the way, no extremes. I call it 48 to 52. Then you don't miss the mark. You're still in the body. You're obviously going to be quote unquote sin because you're in an impure vehicle, but your soul doesn't miss the mark. And that's the whole symbolism of sun, the glyph of the sun, the original sin. So you don't fly too high. That's ego, sort of narcissistic on God. And too low is playing small. That's another form of narcissism, playing small, trying to get your needs met. Neither one works. It is simply that midpoint. Then you're right on mark, and that ego, so to speak, that soul now has a direct purpose and will absolutely hit the center mark of the bullseye.
I love that. I think that's awesome. I love the concept, love the reference with Jesus and so forth. I had one time someone tell me, they go, when you listen to the passages he says in the New Testament, if you change when he says, I am the way, and say, you are the way, and you switch all that around, he was really sharing to you what who you really are, like the essence that you have in you, rather than saying like the way it, religion has portrayed him to be like the gatekeeper to all things,
right. And that's the only savior. The thing is that spiritual texts like the Bible are metaphysical texts, and they were wrapped in manipulation, control, and we needed Hammurabi's code was sort of the first code for conduct in a society. And we need that. And religion, if you've traveled through Europe, you'll see that the religious temples are the center. Now it's more like government buildings, but the church was the center, and we need ethics and morality and all that. But the thing is, they use it for their own purpose to manipulate. And we really went far away. So I have a series I call Explaining Metaphysical Jesus. Metaphysical Jesus. He was a shaman. He was a yogi. He was not a Capricorn. He was a Leo. And explaining. So I love the Bible and I love Jesus. I mean, you're on video. So here's my picture of Jesus right next to me. Like, but we've been taught wrong. And if you strip it and take it to the universal laws and the metaphysical teachings, and he was an astrologer. He was born, died on the fixed cross. There were three crosses on the hill for a reason. He was assigned by the star for a reason. This is all astrology. So there are many, many passages in the Bible that I deconstruct and I show people it's metaphysics, it's spiritual teachings. It's just been hidden in the guise of this savior. And that has done a lot of damage to our psyche because we still have in mind that there is a savior that is coming. And that's part of my Dethroning God series. You're the savior. And that perpetrator or that hell or that Pluto archetype is actually the one that saves you. It's that part of you that creates the crisis, that pushes you forward, that is the savior that you've been waiting for. But we've been sort of told that it's a person. And that archetype of Pluto at the highest vibration, he's known as the magician. So people love Merlin and magic. What's behind the screen? It's you. You're the wizard. You have the ruby red slippers. You've been wearing them all along, but you've been waiting for some savior to tell you to click your heels. So part of my job in all of these teachings and really giving step-by-step direction, because I feel that that's missing in the literature. It's very easy to read these things, write action, write, you know, a thought, control your mind, and not give any direction to people. So I have what's called a spiritual starter kit, where I give you step-by-step-by-step 12 truths on a spiritual tradition. It doesn't matter your religion, your faith, does not matter. These are truths. And to show you that, that's the magician. So we can high vibration that magician instead of a low vibration destructor or perpetrator and blow up our life. That's what I hope, that we can eliminate sort of the nonsense to get to the magic that's within.
I love that. I'm with you 100% on that one. Yeah, that's what we need to do and help break kind of, I call it the chains or the prison, not the prison to a certain degree, but the chains that hold us back to not allowing us to get up to that level. Doc, I feel like I could talk to you all day, but I'm curious, before we wrap this up, how can people connect with you, see all that you're doing, what you're up to, follow you for your new book and all that good stuff?
Sure. So there's several ways. My website is the best way. It's dryahia.com. That's Y-A-H-I-A. I have a YouTube channel with hundreds and hundreds of hours of all this stuff. On my website, I have a workbook tab. There are tons of workbooks. If you want to do individual shadow work, that's linked to my book called The Seven Gates, Seven Steps Beyond Self-Awareness. The workbook is on there. I've got a workbook if you're working through relationship issues and you want to do the shadow work. I've got Dethroning Olympus. These are all books that are coming out later this year. Seven Gates is already out. I also have another book. If people are very into ceremony and ritual, which is one way to help shift the subconscious, that's the fun magic way. You still have to do the hard work. But I did write a book called Witch Bitch, Ceremonies for Gods and Goddesses, to help support the sort of rituals and ceremonies that help us transition. Dethroning Olympus is a family systems model. And I have the Spiritual Adulting series as well. That's from literally from womb to tomb, everything that happens along the way. I have a Patreon. It's a spiritual starter kit. If you're just starting out or you need just guidance step-by-step, that's a great way to connect. I have these step-by-step videos and a Discord, so you have contact with me. I also have a college. It's called Hidden Truths College of Metaphysics, where I teach consciousness coaching. I teach astrology, Akashic Records, shamanism, all of these traditions. And I tie in myth, symbol, archetype, depth psychology, shadow work into all of them. It's a very much a self-discovery process. But some people are attracted more to shamanism than hermetic philosophy. So I provide them all. The teachings are the same, just sort of wrapped in different language. So you can pick your poison.
I love that. For the listeners, I'll have all that info in the show notes. Doc, this was a lot of fun. I love the work you're doing. I knew this was going to be a fun convo, and I know the listeners are going to get a lot out of it. So thanks for all that you're doing and sharing to the world and helping humanity raise up to another level or higher level. And just appreciate you. And thanks for taking time to share space with the Mindful Experiment crew.
Thank you to you and your listeners.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. If you found this episode to be inspirational, pay it forward by sharing with someone that you know can benefit from this. If this is your first time tuning in, please follow us, connect with us so you don't miss another amazing episode. And until next time, keep rocking and rolling.